You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Please welcome Lily Peacock for the Green Desk. Welcome to the Green Desk. My name is Lily Peacock and we're discussing ecological responses to mangrove forest removal. Mangroves are often seen as unsightly and unproductive habitats. However, mangroves provide vital ecosystem services to the estuarine environment, like nutrient cycling, nursery habitats and carbon sequestration. Here with me today is top researcher in marine ecology, Dr. Carolyn Lindquist. Dr. Lindquist incorporates the role of resource management and local, regional and national policies with applied research. Recently, Dr. Lindquist has released a paper on the monitoring and management of mangrove removal in the North Island of New Zealand. Welcome, Carolyn. How are you going today?
Great. Thanks, Lily.
My pleasure. Can you tell us about your project?
Well, we've been working on mangroves for close to a decade now, really looking in all four of the, if you want to call them, mangrove regions in New Zealand, from Northland down to Bay of Plenty. And our initial interest in this was that there was really a proliferation of consents to remove mangroves over the last 10 years or so, but no one had done any of the monitoring to see what happened after you removed mangroves.
And monitoring is an important step for this because, as you mentioned in the paper, most other countries are working towards restoring their mangrove forests. However, New Zealand is trying to remove them. So why is it that we are removing them and how can monitoring help with that?
So mangroves in New Zealand are quite different from much of the rest of the world. In the tropics, usually have an estimated decline of 1 or 2% per year, whereas in New Zealand, we're temperate mangroves, so basically not tropical, and they tend to be growing mostly due to sediment or land-based effects. So what we do on land influences how much sediment erodes and then ends up in our coast and estuaries. And that tends to, in recent years, certainly the last 50 or so, has created very favorable habitats for mangroves. The mangrove estimates on how much they're increasing is about 4% per year. So if you live on the coast or spend a lot of time on the coast, a change in mangroves is usually quite obvious because there'll be trees in places that they may not have been, whether it was 10 years ago or 50 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I like mangroves, but that's quite a big growth factor, 4% per year. Is this maybe a sign that what we're doing on land is really negatively impacting estuarine environments? And if so, are mangrove growth responses something that we can be measuring for that?
Certainly, in a lot of places, they are measuring the change in mangrove distributions, but also I think all of the councils in New Zealand are doing a lot of work to address those land-based impacts. And they're new, for example, there's some new national policy statements that are trying to address water quality in estuaries and in freshwater that's directly related to what those impacts of land use are and how we can address them and mitigate against any negative impacts.
So in your research, going back to talking about monitoring, what conclusions did you come to with how we go forward monitoring mangroves?
Well, I think the first conclusion is that it's actually very handy to be monitoring what happens after we remove mangroves, and that a lot of the original mangrove removals really didn't have any monitoring involved. So we didn't actually have a way of determining whether a positive or negative impact was going on. And then by looking at different methods of mangrove removals, we can then identify which ones are having positive effects on the environment and which ones are having negative impacts that you wouldn't want to use again somewhere else.
And so from your paper, I gathered that hand removing mangroves was the best method and had the least impact on the estuarine environment.
Certainly, that's one of the major factors that we've seen. We've had a number of mechanical removals that have had reasonably large impacts on the environment that have been quite long-lasting. Hand removals have been shown to have lesser impacts, but a lot of it also depends on how big of an area and where that area is that you clear.
So in the bigger picture, what wider impacts does mangrove removal or restoration have on the marine ecosystem, coastal or otherwise?
So ideally, if you have a well-planned mangrove management activity, what you're looking for is something that creates something similar to what was there before, whether it was a sand flat habitat or a mud flat, but it's an unvegetated but healthy habitat where animals live. So the things we like to avoid are things that create excess nutrient release. So for example, if we see macroalgal blooms, so large blooms of sea lettuce type algae that are often found on a lot of our mangrove removals, that's something we do want to avoid, because we know that's a sign of nutrients getting released into the water column, and we know that's a bad idea as well.
In the past, mangrove removals have instigated algal blooms in the area that they were previously in. Is that what you're saying?
Some of them have, not all.
Okay, right. Which is can lead to anoxic environments, right, if it's a really big bloom?
Uh-huh. So a lot... And then other things that we know are a bad idea, one of the larger mechanical removals initially left all the mulch, so all the wood chips basically out in the estuary, with the assumption from some trials that that mulch material would basically wash away. When they did the consent removals, in actuality, the mulch material didn't go anywhere and obviously then was smothering the sediment. So again, something that we've learned but could have been more quickly learned with adequate monitoring so that those methods were avoided in the future.
And lastly, whose responsibility is it to properly monitor mangrove removal or restoration? And what advice can you give to people who are interested in monitoring mangroves?
That's a good question. My understanding is the monitoring requirements are usually part of consent documents. So depending whether a mangrove removal is something that is submitted by a regional council or by a community group, that consenting agency will then require particular aspects of monitoring to occur. And quite often then those monitoring requirements also include triggers that say if such and such happens, then you need to go back and check and see what's going on. So a very good example of that is in Whangamata, the recent mangrove removals, which are about 20 hectares. They've had a very good kind of trial period that involved then monitoring and evaluation before they moved forward into the next removal stage.
And who's monitoring these mangroves? Are they, you know, ecologists, or are they just volunteers, or who's kind of in charge of taking these samples and making sure this is done properly?
Again, that depends on the consent. In Tauranga, a lot of the early removals that were basically done by community groups, all the estuary care groups, I think there are about a dozen of them in Tauranga Harbour, they did their own monitoring and prepared their own reports. Other removal consents have implied places like NIWA, where I work, or the University of Auckland, or other organizations where they've actually employed kind of pedigreed marine ecologists. But there has been a mix of both. It's really whether or not we have standardized things that you can measure. So this paper that we wrote was trying to come up with that list of standardized things so that it is more likely that mangrove removals will be monitored.
Well, what are the measures that we should use to monitor?
A lot of the easy ones are quite visual. So if you walk out after a mangrove removal and you see a whole bunch of green algae growing, or if, as you're walking through, you see the sediment is quite black, or you can detect a very strong sulfurous odor, a lot of these things are quite easy to monitor. Other things that are very important to check is your site where you removed mangroves actually changing to something that is not representative of a mangrove area. So a couple of the really easy things to look at are, what is the sediment type? So has it changed from being muddy sediments to sandier sediments? We've done that both in ways where you're looking at the feel of the sediment as well as how much you sink in the sediment. So you can get very non-scientific measurements that anyone in a community group could go out and measure. But we also have fancier methods that we use in a laboratory where we'd actually do a formal grain size analysis. So we'd look at the percent mud content in fine sand and other sediment components.
Thank you so much, Carolyn, for coming on this afternoon and speaking with me.
Okay, and thank you, Lily.
That was The Green Desk.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.